Scott Morgan stands in a back room at Monroe County's Hazardous Waste Disposal Center in Bloomington. He pops the lid off a bucket. Ah, so those are capacitors.
Yeah, they're much smaller, variety of different applications, but these are all capacitors, and these would be PCB containing.
Some of those actually say Westinghouse on them.
Yes, so we know exactly where they came from. Quite the history with some of these.
By the late 1950s, when Westinghouse started building capacitors in Bloomington, PCBs had become an industry standard. They solved a pressing safety problem by keeping devices like capacitors from short-circuiting and catching on fire. PCBs make almost ideal electrical insulators. They don't conduct electricity, they don't burn except at very high temperatures, and they're so stable they work more or less permanently. Thomas King worked at Westinghouse Bloomington for 30 years, 1963 to 1993. He says Inertine, the company's PCB mix, was everywhere.
At one time, I worked on the fill and solder line. And there we filled the capacitors up to a level where they was almost, you know, they wouldn't take any more. And then we'd solder a plug in them. But you always had Inertine splashing all over you and getting on your clothes and getting your ears and getting your hair.
I mean, if you worked in it and knew the smell, you knew exactly what it was.
Former worker Isaac Browning says Inertine had a consistency like oily water.
Most people didn't want to get it on their vehicles or nothing, you know, because if you had it on your clothes and you got in your car and get it on your car seats, it was awful hard to get rid of.
But Browning says he and his coworkers didn't suspect Inertine was anything more than annoying to work with, which is what Westinghouse told them.
Oh yeah, we don't have to worry about it. It wasn't going to hurt you.
Kenny Seek also worked at Westinghouse.
We had one plant manager come back there and took Inertine and put it all over his face to prove it wouldn't hurt. I think he's dead now, though. I'm not sure.
The company's reassurances ignored a growing body of research linking PCBs to a variety of serious health problems. By the late 1960s, studies had established their toxicity in animals and raised questions about whether they caused cancer. It's not that industry had misunderstood the dangers of PCBs. It's that prior to the 1970s, the government hadn't given much scrutiny to industrial chemicals, says Indiana University law professor John Applegate.
There are areas that were regulated. Pesticides have been regulated for decades and decades. Chemicals that go into food have been regulated for decades and decades. But the general risks of general industrial chemicals were largely unregulated, unless it made its way into some kind of waste stream or made its way into the food stream.
A landmark piece of legislation called the Toxic Substances Control Act changed that. Passed in 1976, TSCA gave the Environmental Protection Agency, then just a few years old, the authority to regulate known and newly created chemicals not covered by other laws. It called out a handful of substances for immediate action, among them lead, asbestos, and PCBs.
You'll see this occasionally, that the particularly salient problem at the time is called out, but it's within the context of a much more general statute trying to set up an architecture for chemical regulation.
TSCA forbade PCB manufacture and use in new products after 1979. Anticipating the ban, in 1977, Westinghouse made plans to ship about 100 drums of PCBs from Bloomington to a plant it owned in Brazil, where its use would still be legal. But 1979 did not bring the end of PCBs in Bloomington. Westinghouse had by then been releasing them into the local environment for almost 20 years. Seek says it usually started when a capacitor failed a quality check.
When they had bad capacitors, they had guys cutting the tops off and pouring it right in the drain. I mean, right in the sewer drains, you know. So it ain't no wonder it's everywhere.
PCBs dumped from the plant built up in sewer pipes and contaminated the treatment plant. Some people ended up with PCBs in their gardens because the plant used to give treated sludge away as fertilizer. Other capacitors ended up at local landfills, where open burning may have served to further disperse PCBs. Bloomington Utilities Deputy Director John Langley says the dumps weren't picky about what they set on fire.
You get in wood pallets, you're going to dig a hole and put those in there, or you want to bury the ash. So you pour some oil or gasoline on them, paint, whatever. And in those days, you could bring anything to a landfill. They didn't look at what you have.
The pollution might have been a short-term problem if only PCBs broke down easily. But they persist in the environment as well as they persist in capacitors. A massive cleanup has yet to erase their footprint in Bloomington.
So what we have a
at the Hazardous Waste Center, Scott Morgan says he no longer tries to guess when he'll see the end of old PCB capacitors and light ballasts coming in for disposal. When the center gets a drum full, it goes to Greenwood and then a processing center in Phoenix, Arizona.
They will actually freeze the ballasts overnight. And then they will actually break those open the next day. Then they're able to separate all the different components. And the PCB-containing material will actually go to an incinerator. And then all the other types of materials that cannot be recycled will, unfortunately, like the potting and things, will have to go to a landfill.
The center's annual report shows it received about 3,500 pounds of old light ballasts last year. Morgan estimates about half of those contain PCBs. For WFIU News, I'm Sevilla Mann.